You're going to hear some people do some things close to their heart, and you're going to hear some things to ride to and have a good time to. So it's going to be on Prison Pipeline, April 10th, 6:30 p.m.
Prototype, call it the volume one, call it the overnight, call it what you want to call it. I can't call it wrong or right, man. It's on a tightness, a prototype testing, testing 1, 2, 3, man. I'm
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Radical Ecology Night, Thursday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Radical Ecology Night features a screening of the documentary film Weed Eater and a presentation by the Pollinator Collective called The Birds and the Bees, Why They Are Dying and What You Can Do to Help. Again, that's Radical Ecology Night, Thursday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Don't worry. I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Dearly beloved,
be sure to tune in to KBOO Community Radio on Thursday, April 20th, just before midnight. We'll be celebrating the life and music of Prince Rogers Nelson, the one and only Mighty Purple One, right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And don't forget, come ride with Diablo on Prince's birthday. More information on the KBOO website under Community Events. Rest in peace.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. The only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Steven Siegel, and I'm here with my co-host, Chris Reiser. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Also sitting in with us today is Tina Turner Morfitt. Tonight, Chris and I are hosting our first Labor Radio show.
Hey, hey.
Woo-hoo.
A Labor Radio comes on every Monday at 6 p.m., and Chris and I will be hosting every second Monday of the month. And I think we're both extremely excited to be doing that.
I concur, yes. This is Chris Reiser here. And Tina is a Labor Radio co-host on the first Monday of the month and has agreed to facilitate our introduction to the KBOO community in general and Labor Radio folks in particular while we complete the training necessary to run an awesome show like this. Thanks for sitting in with us tonight, Tina.
Hey, no problem. So tonight we'll hear about your journeys into education and organizing. And we'd like to hear about some of your experiences and thoughts about labor unions from an educator's point of view. All righty?
Sounds
good.
So
let's get with it. Okay. So Chris, I understand you're a humanities teacher at Ockley Green Middle School in Portland. In the Portland Public Schools, and a member of the Portland Association of Teachers. Is that about right?
That's correct.
How long have you been doing that job?
This is my fourth year. This is my first year at Ockley Green.
Oh, I see. You still have that glint in your eye, so it still must be going okay.
I'm on a mission.
All right. Okay, and Stephen, you're a special education teacher at Reynolds High School in the Reynolds School District and a member of the Reynolds Education Association.
That's right.
And how long have you been doing that job?
This is my second year there.
Ooh, newbie, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to welcome both of you guys to the Labor Continuum and here at the KBOO family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So tell me, Chris, how did you get into teaching?
Long story short, I was working at Powell's Books out in Beaverton, out on the west side, and had done that for 7 years and loved it. It was the best job I ever had. But, you know, retail is limited in terms of your intellectual stimulation. So I decided I was going to go back to school to see what was out there for me, and stumbled into the Portland Teachers Program, which is a full tuition scholarship program for people of color who want to teach. So I spent 7 years, essentially from freshman through graduate school, in the Portland Teachers Program, went to PCC, PSU, and the Graduate Teachers Education Program at PSU. You know, I was looking to be a hip hop artist when I was a young guy, and that was where I was really wanting to go. And then I thought, you know, maybe I could get into ministry in my religious days. But people kept telling me, have you thought about teaching? Have you thought about teaching? Have you thought about teaching? And then randomly, I went to a lady at PCC to check and make sure my credits were okay. Mm-hmm. And she slipped me a card and said, have you ever heard of the Portland Teachers Program? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, you're about the 100th person to mention education to me, so maybe I ought to take this up. Mm-hmm. So I interviewed with Deborah Cochran over there at PCC Cascade, and the rest is history.
So how did you get where you're at now?
Well, I started out after I graduated in 2013. I started out at Woodlawn, K-8, and teaching the middle school language arts and social studies program there. That was a very interesting experience. I love being in that building. But what happened was last year, the community really pushed the district to consolidate several K-8s that were in the area into one middle school. And the district wanted to hold off on that, but the community was really strong in saying, no, we want it now, because every year that goes by, these kids are underserved.
Sure.
So when that program got consolidated, Woodlawn, Peninsula, Beach, and Ockley all consolidated at Ockley Green, and I had the opportunity to go with the program.
I see.
So I went with the program, and it's been a wild ride.
Wow. Okay, Stephen, what about you? How did you get into teaching?
You know, my first job as at least my first paid job, as a 16-year-old, I taught swim lessons to young children, and I loved it. I loved teaching kids. I loved getting to know them.
Uh-huh.
It was fun to be able to show them something that they enjoyed learning. At least most of the time, they enjoyed learning. Sometimes
sure.
The pool was cold and they wanted to get out. But, And so I think that planted the seed there. Although, you know, it was quite a while after that before I realized that I wanted to be a public school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I figured that out, and I was living in California at the time, and ended up teaching middle school math. Even though I don't have a degree in math, my undergraduate was in psychology. But
wow.
That qualifies you for math, doesn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, in California, it's a little different. You could basically, you have to have a college degree, but if
sure.
you pass a test in the subject area, you can teach that
okay.
regardless of your degree. So I taught middle school math, and it was in my second year of doing that when I thought, you know, I'm not sure I want to keep doing this. And there are a couple of school counselors working here, and they seem like they have a really cool job because they get to talk to kids about really important stuff that's going on in their life.
Sure.
And so I took the opportunity to finally leave California and move to Seattle and get a master's degree in school counseling there. And then I worked as a school counselor in a couple of different school districts in Washington for a total of 4 years. My first year, I was out in a tiny little town in central Washington,
mm-hmm.
and that was an interesting experience, a small town living experience. And then I came back to Seattle for 3 years. And then I moved down to Portland in 2001 and worked as a school counselor for a few years, high school level and elementary school level, and then got a special education degree a couple years ago, and I've circled all the way back to math again, but teaching students who are in special education.
Okay. Wow. So what's different with teaching special education students to students who may not need that extra help?
Well, when you're dealing with kids who have what's called an individual education plan, then they might have that plan for all sorts of reasons. So it's hard to make one statement about that.
Okay.
In general, I would say that the classes that I teach are smaller, so fewer students. And I always have at least one education assistant who is also in the classroom and there to help. So we're able to give a lot more one-on-one attention. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes these students need that little extra one-on-one attention that it's hard to give when you have a typical class of 30 or 35
exactly.
or however many some of these.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, they get kind of lost in all the excitement, right?
And no EA, too. So that having that extra adult in the classroom, even if they're not a trained educator, is
helpful.
It very.
Yeah. So, fellas, tell me about your union experience. How are you involved in your union?
Well, my first year teaching, I was not really involved at all. Actually, going back to Powell's, I started there when I was 19, and they had just unionized, voted in the union, and it took two votes. The first time, it did not pass, and I can't remember who it was that they were calling in. I think it was SEIU, like Service Employees Union.
Okay.
But the vote narrowly failed. So then they went back and talked to the longshoremen, ILWU, International Longshore and Warehousers Union.
Yeah.
And then the vote narrowly passed. The longshoremen, to my recollection, presented a little bit more strength in terms of their ability to back up the members in bargaining.
Okay. All right.
And so that was then, and so I got to see what happens when an institution unionizes and what happens when the workers actually get to the table and bargain collectively. And that was a really interesting experience to kind of see the growth of that process, especially in a place like Powell's, which is a very liberal working environment.
Sure.
Right. So that was interesting. And went on strike twice. So that was really interesting. And then as a member of the Portland Association of Teachers, my first year I was kind of in the background. Second year I stepped up as a representative within the building. I was not the head rep. There was another gentleman there who was far more experienced, knows the contract inside and out. And so I just kind of, played a support role. And really that was, I was really asked, right? Please, we need folks here to step up. And so a lot of my involvement with the union was, because there was a real serious need and nobody else was stepping up. So as a building rep, I'm collecting information, checking in on members to make sure that they feel comfortable, that they're being served, that their rights are being protected. And then I also sat in on the new bargaining process that the district is trying out, PAT in the district, called interest-based bargaining.
Oh, yeah. So I'm very familiar with that.
Quite an old model, but
oh, yeah.
It took us a while to come around to it. The state facilitator recommended it after our last bout, where we went all the way to the strike vote.
Gotcha.
And so I was an observer and an alternate, so I got to sit back and take notes. And that was a really great process to kind of see with the leadership actually in the room.
Wow.
So I love serving. But at the same time, education is such a beast, right? It's really difficult to do your job and to meet the needs of other people. And
exactly.
So I was very reluctant at first, especially as a new teacher. But I'm getting my sea legs as a rep and figuring out how to make sure folks are okay.
Well, great. And Stephen?
One thing I wanted to say before I talked a little bit about my involvement is in schools, in teachers' unions, I think sometimes we use some terminology that maybe is different in some other unions. And so when Chris was talking about being a rep or being a building rep, sometimes representative can mean something very different.
Exactly.
If you're working in another union. So, I think I would equate it with something like a steward or I think there are some other terms.
Or but, even a MAT team person.
Okay.
Which is a member action team.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So when I first started teaching, I was completely clueless about even the existence of a union. When I was in California, I mean, unless I've forgotten something, because it's been a few years, I don't remember ever hearing anything about my union. When I moved up to Seattle, again, I really didn't know much about them at all. I even had a problem at one point with an administrator there, and I didn't know that I really had the union as a resource. At one point, they organized a couple of, we were just working our hours and nothing beyond our hours, so we walked out together. That was about the extent of the union existence that I was aware of. And then when I moved down here, at one point, after I'd been working for a while and really enjoying my work, I guess I'd say I became a little more bold, and I became what I think the term is, a troublemaker. And as a result, I really, at one point, became a target for the principal mm-hmm. of the school where I was working. And my union really wasn't very supportive of me. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were sort of there, and they sat in on a couple meetings. But when push came to shove, they said, yeah, you better back off. You better, you know, you better take their offer that they're putting out there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a real good impression of my union in my early years. Mm-hmm. And then Occupy Wall Street happened, and mm-hmm. that kind of got me excited about sure. some things. And I thought, hey, wouldn't it be great to bring my union and all of its resources into this movement? And I was naive, and I didn't realize what a big old, I don't know.
What a beast it was, right?
Yeah, I was going to say dinosaur or something. Yeah. But it was like nobody in the union, everybody was pointing this way and that way, go talk to this person, go talk. Right. Nobody really knew what to do. And then, so that got me to where I am now at Reynolds. And Reynolds, I mean, I'll talk more about them in a minute, but I'm a part of what's called their executive board. I'm on their organizing committee, and I'm also part of what started this year, a social justice caucus. So I've gotten very involved. And Tina's been so kind to point out the time, so I am just going to point out that if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, and for the Working Class.
So, fellas, this is your maiden voyage.
Yes.
I know you know, listening to you, I'm very excited for you on a lot of levels. I'm very excited that you are taking another look at the union, that you are assuming your position in the union in order to help fight what is coming down the street, not just here locally, but also nationally.
Yeah.
And so I really look forward to listening to your show in the future about what's happening nationally and how that mirrors here what's happening locally.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your plans for your show?
Well, man, we have, I think, we really want to... Actually, let me defer to Steven because I think he's got some notes though, and then I'll freestyle off of Steven.
Well, you know, I wanted to say a little bit more about just to talk about my union and sort of the state of unions before we get into our show. Maybe we could close with that.
Mm-hmm.
So my union right now, my local union, has strong leadership. Mm-hmm. We have some really good people that are. You know, we have a good, strong president. Our bargaining chair is good. And when I say strong, I don't mean, you know, maybe in sometimes the traditional sense of sort of strong arming, but
sure.
in terms of being a good leader, we've got some good leadership. They went on strike 3 years ago, so they know what that's like.
Right, that's not easy.
Yes. And there's a lot of work going on right now in trying to engage members. So I can see that, you know, there's not a lot of satisfaction with how things are. They're working to mm-hmm. try to engage members more. We are working now to engage our community. So
exactly.
we're doing some community organizing,
right.
Really early stages of it, but
sure.
we see the need for that. Now, If you start talking about OEA, Oregon Education Association, the statewide level, or the National Education Association, then we've got problems there. We've got big problems in the way that those unions operate. I was just reading a review of a book, and I want to get the book. It's called No Shortcuts by Jane McElvey. I hope I pronounced her name correctly. She talks about three different kinds of unions. Mm-hmm. And there's the sort of the, I think she called it the advocacy model, which is sort of the old model of there are just a few people that do everything. Then there's the mobilizing model. This is where we are right now. It's the same few people mm-hmm. Making all the decisions, mm-hmm. but they're telling other people and they're getting a core group of other people to do the things that they tell them to do,
sure.
like show up for lobby day or mm-hmm. email your legislator or call or go to this town hall. So they're telling people what to do, but still it's top down, right?
Okay.
It's not member driven. So we have a long way to go to push OEA.
Yeah. And I would second that too. What I've been hearing a lot, there are the OEA RAs, the representative assemblies, where the locals elect representatives from their members to go to the state level.
Mm-hmm.
And at these representative assemblies, they draft, they propose and draft new guidelines. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't been to an RA
yeah.
yet. So.
Yeah. It's called a new business item.
A new business item. And
yes.
members can basically come up with any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
They put forward proposals speaking out on healthcare, calling for healthcare for all, right? And what ends up happening is that members put forward these really strong proposals that come from the bottom, and what ends up is as they get adopted by the leadership, the message or the mechanism to actually put things into action gets watered down. So there's something happening at the leadership level where the desires and wishes as articulated by the members, something happens where, well, oh, sorry, oh man, we couldn't make that happen. Sorry, I don't know what happened there, but it's not what you wanted.
Well, right. Fellas, it seems to me that leadership is the place for you, given that you have this excitement and you have this analysis about what you think needs to be get done. And trust me, it's not going to get done without you. So
right.
It's time to saddle up.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, when you were talking about that, it reminded me just real quick of one example. There was an NBI passed a couple years ago. It was...
What's an NBI?
New business item.
New business item. It's a proposal. It's something that if it's voted on by the representative assembly, then leadership or the executive board of OEA is supposed to ensure that it actually happens. And this particular one was a moratorium. Okay, so that's a word that maybe some people aren't aware of, but a moratorium on the statewide standardized testing. It's called Smarter Balance. And it's a horrible test, right? And we don't have time to get into that. That could be a topic for another show.
Yeah.
But but I will say this. It was voted on, and a moratorium in my book means you stop something.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe a temporary stop, but you stop something until some other conditions are met. It's a stop. It's a halt.
Mm-hmm.
We never did that. We have not done that. So despite voting for it, we haven't done that. And I'm sure there are excuses about, well, you know, it wouldn't be legal or this and that. But we voted on it, and yet we didn't do it. And there are plenty of other examples of that, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so, and that's just at the state level. So then when you start talking about the NEA, we can talk about how the NEA pre-endorsed Hillary Clinton before members even had an opportunity to voice their candidate.
Sure.
And that caused a firestorm. And especially in PAT, there were some really frustrated people. And I want to say, in terms of what's happening at PAT, we have some strong leadership too. Gwen Sullivan just wrapped up her leadership, and she led us through a strike as well. Well, we voted to strike and then finally got an agreement in a pugilist style negotiation round. And Suzanne Cohen, who was the vice president at the time, she's now the president. And Elizabeth Teal is our news vice president. And the two of them are also very strong. Both of them come from middle school backgrounds as well. I feel like PAT, though PAT has some work to do too. I think mm-hmm. PAT is identifying those spaces where they have growth around equity,
sure.
And including members of color. They're reaching out right now
sure.
to hear from members of color about what's working and what's not. So they're in a process, I think, of identifying areas where they can lead and where they can really ensure that all the voices of their members are heard. And mm-hmm. so it's good to see even where some areas of weakness are, that they're acknowledged, they're recognized, and they're taking steps to try to meet the needs of members where they're at. So, yeah.
So, you were talking about what you're going to do with your show.
Yes.
There's a lot going on locally, and I think that's probably where we are going to start.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to look to bring in local teachers, union activists, and leaders to come in and talk about what's going on. But I think at some point we're going to want to start looking more statewide and nationally, and maybe mm-hmm. even globally.
Sure.
There's some really exciting stuff going on right now. For example, in Argentina, they just had, I think I read like 400,000 teachers are on strike
sure.
right now. There seems like there's a lot going on in Mexico and in Oaxaca.
Always.
Yes.
Those teachers are serious now.
Yes. So, and that's good for perspective, because we tend to get, you know, kind of timid here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if we can look at what's going on elsewhere in the world, that can help to make us a little bolder and not afraid to do some things.
So, yeah, I'm thinking you're also doing a legislative watch too, right? There's
yes.
some stuff going on
yes.
down the
yes.
road here.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, Measure 98, for example, was passed, and not many people, as Kanan Schlesinger on the evening news was demonstrated very well, many people didn't know what was going on, because it was sandwiched between Measure 97, which died, which was supposed to be the corporate tax to go mm-hmm. to schools.
Right.
And then Measure 99, which was the outdoor school program, which passed.
Right.
And then Measure 98 was nestled right in between there, and nobody
exactly.
really knew what it was. Something about high school. Okay,
right.
That sounds great. High school graduation rates. Yes, I'm for that. But it was an unfunded mandate.
Right.
Right. And so now Lou Frederick is down in Salem trying to figure out what to do with this. And
I know the senator.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's a lot of legislative work to do, and
mm-hmm.
It's going on all the time, right? And things happen without us even knowing about it, right? So definitely we have to keep an eye on that. And also I think in looking at education and labor unions, we are, I was trying to do some research on this, but you know, we are one of the last sectors that's fully organized.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but we also are directly in contact with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in the fight. I mean, if the teachers' unions in this country are broken
mm-hmm.
or made so ineffective that they're meaningless, that doesn't bode well for collective bargaining or collective organization for anyone. And so I think we're going to keep that in mind as we go forward, that I feel like educators, both just in their role as you know, raising up the next generation of young people, as well as being this kind of last bastion of a fully organized workforce, They're coming for us. And so we have to understand how that's happening and be able to push back in a really meaningful way, which means that we've got to work from the bottom all the way up. So starting with our locals, with Reynolds Education Association and PAT, and going all the way up.
Well said, Chris. I also think about what's called the corporate education reform that's going on right now. And I use reform in quotations. It's not really a reform. It's actually deform. And we also have to look at capitalism and neoliberalism and how that is really related very directly to our educational system right now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of things that we can look at here in our show.
Wow. You have quite a menu ahead of you.
Yes, we do. Well, Tina, thank you so much for facilitating this discussion. And we want to give a shout out to our engineer,
Mike.
Yes, thank you, Mike. And thank you, Stephen. This is Chris Reiser. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Don't worry, I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Dearly beloved,
be sure to tune in to KBOO Community Radio on Thursday, April 20th, just before midnight. We'll be celebrating the life and music of Prince Rogers Nelson, the one and only Mighty Purple One, right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. And don't forget, come ride with Diablo on Prince's birthday. More information on the KBOO website under Community Events. Rest in peace.